Well, good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us today for Peyto's fourth quarter and year-end 2015 results conference call. We did move up our release date a week and posted that on our website a couple of months ago, so hopefully that didn't catch too many people off guard. March is a busy month, so tough sometimes coordinating all the schedules. Before we get started this morning, I wanted to take a moment and send out a personal thank you to all of the Peyto team for another great year. I've been lucky enough to be part of this organization for 15 years now, and every year I'm blown away by the amazing job that this team does, rising to whatever challenges might be thrown at them and conquering them all with professionalism and integrity. And so I think on behalf of all shareholders, I want to throw out a big thank you to the entire Peyto team. In the room with me today, we've got all of the Peyto management team, consisting of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. We've got Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration, JP Lachance, our VP of Engineering, Tim Louie, our VP of Land, Lee Curran, our VP of Drilling and Completions, and Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. And of course, we also have our investor awareness rep, Jim Grant, here. And Jim, you've got a bunch of questions for everybody, so why don't I turn the call over to you?
Okay. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session, where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. So, Darren, our 2015 fourth quarter and year-end results news release details impressive financial and production results for 2015. What do you most want to highlight to investors about the past year?
Well, you know, Jim, we did have some impressive production results this year, no question. Busting through that 100,000 BOE a day mark was pretty impressive, especially for a company that, you know, just 5 or 6 years ago was down at sort of 20,000 barrels a day. So some amazing growth there for sure. But, you know, I think the more important thing for investors to focus on this year is the costs and the efficiencies that we've achieved. You know, we were already known by most as a super low-cost producer. We were already leading the industry in terms of our efficiencies, F&Ds, and capital efficiencies. And yet, because that's something that we pay very close attention to, and because we know that ultimately affects our profitability, we still, this year, managed to drive those costs down and to improve on those efficiencies. And, you know, I think that's amazing, amazing work by the team. When you consider that our combined PDP FD&A and our cash costs in the fourth quarter were just $2.39 in MCFE, I think that's pretty awesome. I mean, last year alone, our PDP FD&A was $2.25, so we've really managed to push both of those numbers down substantially. And, you know, already our F&D last year was top decile in the industry, so to be able to make the gains that we have this year is pretty impressive, I think.
Okay. Turning to Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. So, Todd, if Peyto has always been low-cost producer and has found ways to always drive costs down, where have we come over the past few years on a per-unit cost basis? And what are some of the focal points for ongoing determination to further reduce our costs?
Well, Jim, over the past 3 years, we've seen our operating costs drop by nearly 30%. A portion of this reduction has come through an intensive effort to use technology and by making key changes to process. We've employed a more focused effort on remote well monitoring using the SCADA system we have in place, and the result is that we've been able to increase the number of wells that each operator looks after in the field. We are also working with our water haulers to optimize fluid transport in the field. We recently added GPS units to their trucks to help gather data and optimize scheduling and routing. And changes in process have evolved around pad drilling, which has helped to reduce property tax and chemical transport costs and manpower requirements. We've also worked hard to reduce maintenance costs by moving away from expensive third-party labor and instead bringing top-quality compressor mechanics in-house. We've also started recycling water, using produced water for fracs, which has helped reduce volume and the distance required for transport, as well as reducing our volume disposal costs. These fundamental changes are providing us with a means to make lasting reductions to our overall operating costs.
Thank you, Todd. Turning to Lee Curran, our VP of Drilling and Completions. Lee, it seems like we have a strong focus on the operating cost side of our business. We presented some compelling numbers in our release about how our capital costs come down year over year, with some color on how much is service company cost book reductions and how much is alterations to the way we do our work. Can you review in a general sense the changes we have made to achieve some of our cost reductions from both a drilling and completions angle, and whether there is much more ahead to refine in our quest to further reduce costs?
Yeah, Jim, in this environment, cost is king. I think we all know that. Service cost reductions have been reasonably deep and widespread across the industry. And although these reductions were and continue to be critical to the success of the industry, one would expect much of these reductions will evaporate when healthier oil and gas prices do return. Now, as a very generalized statement, a reduction of margins within a number of service sectors was arguably overdue. Many operators may boast even deeper service cost reductions than we are able to. However, that's entirely premised on where you start your measurement. We're fortunate here at Peyto to have many key service providers that have maintained mutually respectful business arrangements with us, providing quality service and priority pricing through both the good times and the not so good. Now, through prolonged downturn cycles like these, only the strong will survive, and we want to ensure that we've done our part in the preservation of a healthy level of competition when this cycle turns for the better. Now, that doesn't mean the industry needs to support 50 or 60 service providers in a given sector, but we'd be shooting ourselves in the foot to see only 5 or 6 service providers survive this.
Mm-hmm. And back to Todd quickly. Todd, how about the tie-in and equip part of this supply cost equation? Do we have any room for reductions to our costs through modifications to the way we do things or the equipment or technology we employ?
Yeah, Jim, through 2015, we realized a reduction in well-equipping costs of 18%. This was a result of reductions in separator package and installation labor costs, as well as ongoing refinements to equipment selection as we continue to add wells to pads. In 2016, we anticipate a further reduction on some pad wells of another 5% by continuing to refine the equipment we install on a pad. We have seen a reduction in pipeline construction costs through a reduction in labor and materials. And additionally, pad drilling means we have less new pipe required to connect new wells, which is helping to bring down our overall tie-in costs.
Okay, thanks, Todd. Back to Lee. I think you had more
something. Yeah, sorry, Jim. I just kind of got rolling. Perhaps I'm long-winded today. I didn't want to focus entirely on service costs, but I wanted to open up with that. So further to my prior statements, we do see some further service cost reductions on the horizon. For example, a recent tender for tubular goods shows a pending 8% cost reduction as compared to our first quarter of 2016. And this is all despite a relatively strong U.S. dollar. Rig activity continues to decline rapidly with little optimism for summer work. And as such, we anticipate further reductions in rig rates are imminent. Now, with all that said, we can't simply solely rely on the reduction of margins within the service sector to maintain our competitive advantage. Right now, every operator with a capital program should be in a position to call themselves a good service pricing negotiator. Right now, that's the easy part to accomplish. Our capital costs were reduced in the order of 25% year over year from 2014 to 2015. And of that 25%, admittedly, the largest portion was the result of service cost reductions. However, approximately one-third of these reductions was a direct result of improved performance and technical revisions to our program. We feel confident that these improvements are tangible and will be retained even in the event of an industry activity increase that will undoubtedly result in a pricing increase through the service industry. Given the maturity of our program and the fact that we have long been able to boast the lowest cost structure in the Deep Basin, an 8-9% cost reduction on the basis of performance alone and exclusive to service pricing is a significant accomplishment. Refining our program is, and always has been, a continuous process here at Peyto, not one that is exclusive to a low price environment. We maintain a very minimalistic approach to our well construction activities, and everything we add must add value. Last year, we implemented a number of revisions to our drilling and completion programs in an effort to reduce cost. On the drilling front, some of these items included continued tweaks to drilling fluid programs, drill bit technology advancements, as well as a measured reduction in dedicated wellbore conditioning trips that directly reduced days on location. On the completion front, we made methodical refinements to sand types, chemical packages, a reduction of nitrogen use on applicable species. We've been very active in tweaking the frack recipe, so to speak. One of the most significant gains we made in well costs was an effective doubling of two-well pad drilling as compared to 2014. Heading into breakup, we're planning our first three- and four-well pad operations. Now, early in a drilling program, the learning curve is often very steep with a continual shallowing of slope as the program advances to more of a development phase. We saw our operational performance taking this form, where those performance gains, such as drilling days, showed continuous improvement but at a shallower rate year over year. This characteristic remained true from 2009 when we started this program through to 2014. However, in 2015, we experienced a significant increase in performance with year-over-year gains similar to those we were experiencing much earlier in our horizontal program. In other words, we were able to find the steep part of the learning curve again. We employ a core group of extremely engaged and loyal and competent staff, both in the Calgary office and at the field level. Every individual in this group adds value and seeks ways to improve our efficiencies. This has long been the culture here at Peyto. Many companies contain elements of this culture. However, I'd be amiss to find a peer where it exists with the level of commitment as it does here, through all disciplines of both the office and field operations.
Thank you. Turning to Scott Robinson, our COO and VP of Operations. Scott, the liquids recovery focus has come first full circle over the last few years. With low gas prices in 2012 and high liquid prices, we made a concerted effort to strip the most liquid possible out of our raw gas production. It seems that there is an abundance of natural gas liquids, propane in particular, that has developed with the growth in wet gas production. Can you recap how we responded during 2015 and what we see ahead in our approach to the gas liquid content of our produced gas stream?
Sure, Jim. We spoke about this a fair bit over the last few quarters, so I'll cut my answer short a little bit here. But if we were to dial back into the middle of 2014, we'd be reminded that oil was up around $100, and the three, you know, where that measures against the three candidate NGL species, propane, butane, and condensate that we can recover. Well, the condy was up around that $100 a barrel level. The butane was in the $50 to $60 a barrel level, and propane was $25 to $30. And there was a strong impetus for us to recover liquids. Propane was worth two and a half times as much in the liquid form, and butane four times as much. But we saw liquid prices drop the latter half of 2014 and through 2015 to the point where that butane price came down to about $25 a barrel. It's still definitely worth recovering as a liquid, 1.5 to 2 times what it's worth in the gas form. But propane has fallen down anywhere from nothing to negatives at time, and that's at market. We have to spend money to get it to market, $5 to $10 a barrel to get it to market. So it became a losing proposition. So we were left with this dilemma: we want to recover butane, but we don't want to recover propane at the current market conditions. And so we spent a good part of 2015, and we spoke of this before, refining the recovery levels. We took our plant recovery of propane effectively on a composite level from about 30% recovery of all incoming propane down to about 4%, which is a pretty significant accomplishment. A lot of science goes into fine-tuning those plant processes to achieve that. And that only came at a small compromise to our butane recovery. So that's the game that we've been playing. What do we see ahead? Well, like other elements of our business right now, there's a very strong need to be responsive to the marketplace and the current oversupply situation while these prices, you know, find their proper equilibrium. And they are definitely below equilibrium. That's why we're rejecting these fluids. So we'll continue to be nimble as we are throughout our business. You know, we had our Old Man Deep Cut plant. We made some changes here recently to allow us to recover as low as 5% propane or as high as 65%. So we've got complete flexibility there, and as the market tells us what to do, well, we will respond. One more kind of interesting downstream point on the NGL business that I want to point out is we're currently working on a value proposition enhancement project with a midstream company. Could provide some significant improvements. It certainly will provide improvements to our transportation and market flexibility for NGLs, and it could provide a broader market access, including potential overseas markets for NGLs. So we'll work on that over the next year or two to see, you know, how NGL prices come out, and that may be a key part of how we respond to the current situation.
Thank you, Scott. Lee, we talked a lot about the evolution of the Brazos area over the last few years. One of the key enablers to the growth to dominance of this property has been the dramatic reduction of drilling and completion costs. What are some of the important aspects of that cost evolution, and do you see us holding on to or further improving on the Brazos costs?
Yeah, Jim, tackling the Brazos area has definitely been one of our greatest accomplishments over the past year. Since Peyto's entry into this area in late 2011, gains in performance and costs have been staggering. Now back to 2011, our first drill in this area came in at approximately $5 million, as compared to our 2015 average of approximately $2.3 million. Early in the development of that area, our exploration phase, more accurately, the wellbore instability events we encountered, resulting in stuck pipe occurrences through the various coal packages in our build sections, presented us a lot of challenges. And although our program revisions played a significant role in overcoming these challenges, a consistent, methodical approach to operating practices, and that included a lot of training of personnel, has resulted in the avoidance of many stuck pipe events. Despite average depths increasing slightly from 4,470 meters in 2014 to approximately 4,450 meters in 2015, our spud to rig release days declined by 22% from 27 days to 21. This resulted in a 29% reduction in cost from $3.28 million to $2.34 million on average. Normalizing costs to account for this increased average well depth translates to nearly $1 million a well reduction in drilling costs alone. Similarly, completion performance and cost is also dramatically improved. Despite the fact that our average number of stages pumped increased 25% from 9.5 stages in 2014 to 12.7 last year, we saw our completion cost per well decrease by 20% from an average of $2.02 million to $1.63 million in 2015. Normalizing this on a cost per stage pump basis, that equates to a staggering 40% reduction. Beyond the avoidance of wellbore instability complications in our operations, as well as some measured cost gains in refining elements of our frac programs, the largest single measure to reduce Brazos cost structure was a dramatic increase in two-well paths. This provided us increased efficiencies in the form of reduced site prep, reclamation, reduced movement of equipment, and a very positive contribution in our ability to recycle flowback water. In 2014, only 2 of 11 wells were drilled as part of a pad operation. However, as our experience and confidence in the area grew, our implementation of two-well pad operations grew significantly as well, with 14 out of 22 wells drilled in 2015 being part of a pad operation. The long and short of all this is that improved efficiencies and material program revisions have resulted in most of the savings we're experiencing in Brazos. By this, the cost reductions we have accomplished here are not nearly as reliant on service cost pricing. We're confident in our ability to retain a very large portion of these savings in the event that service pricing returns to pre-2015 levels.
Thanks, Lee. Now, staying with the Brazos area and turning to J.P. Lachance, our VP of Exploitation. J.P., in our news release, we speak to exceptional results in the Brazos area. Can you give some color on the well outcomes of our drilling program in that area?
Sure, Jim. We had some great results throughout our land base last year, but certainly one of the brighter spots of our 2015 drilling program was indeed the Wilrich wells in Brazos. We have some exceptional productivity improvement on these wells relative to the past. Well, for example, the last 16 wells we drilled are twice as productive as the wells that predate them. The average third-month rate of these wells is still over 5 million a day, and some have already produced a BCF in the first 5 months. Now, as was noted in our recent reserves podcast, these wells received larger reserve assignments than our predecessors and more than our average Sundance Wilrich wells in 2015. Now, the reason for this productivity improvement can be partially attributed to the changes in our stimulation design, with the increases in frac density that Lee just alluded to, but a large part has to do with the particular geographic area that we are exploiting, which seems to have better quality rock. But I think what's most important is when you couple these results with the improved drilling and completion cost performance in that area, as Lee mentioned, these wells generate a full cycle rate of return of 28%, even on today's dismal strip pricing. We plan to have one rig dedicated to continue to delineate this sweet spot trend here in 2016.
Okay. Todd, the Swanson plant was expanded last year and additional large diameter pipes were added to the gas gathering system. How is that plant situated to play a key role in Peyto's growth over the next few years? And can you also give us an update on the progress being made on the Brazeau gas plant and the role it will play in Peyto's future growth?
Sure, Jim. So the Swanson expansion was completed in November. The plant now has a capacity of about 130 million cubic feet a day. And this has positioned us to be able to produce about another 6,000 to 7,000 BOE a day through the facility beyond current production volumes. Construction on the expansion of the Brazeau gas plant is expected to be complete at the end of March. And once fully operational, the plant will have capacity of about 100 million cubic feet a day, which adds about 7,000 barrels per day of production capacity.
Okay, turning to Tim Louie, our VP of Land. Tim, can you give us some color on the various land acquisitions we made in 2015 and so far in 2016? How active have we been acquiring land outside of land sales?
Thanks, Jim. In 2015, Peyto acquired 58 net sections for $8.6 million and an average price of $230 per acre. Out of the 58 sections, 37 sections were picked up at land sales, while the remaining lands were acquired through asset deals. Peyto sees 181 drillable locations on the lands we acquired last year. This underscores a guiding principle of ensuring the lands we acquire contain drilling opportunities. For 2016, we have not purchased any lands at the three land sales held to date. This does not imply that we have slowed down our acquisition efforts. Instead, we have been very active negotiating asset deals within our Greater Sundance area. In the past 2 months, we have closed three property acquisitions. The combination of the three deals amounts to an additional 1,500 BOE per day of natural gas production, 24 drilling opportunities, and an increased interest in our Galloway natural gas plant. Out of the nine gas plants that Peyto owns and operates, the Galloway plant is the only one in which Peyto does not have a 100% working interest. With the purchase of an additional 20% interest, our ownership in the Galloway plant has increased to 89%.
Thank you, Tim. Turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, looking back on 2015, what are the exploration highlights you'd like to point out, and what is new and exciting moving forward into 2016?
Jim, it's been a really good year. As JP mentioned, the Wilrich at Brazeau has been the number one standout play, but we've also been quite successful with the Wilrich at Edson. The Wilrich play near our Swanson gas plant at Edson got off to a slow start a couple of years ago, but we've seen significant improvement in the reservoir sand quality, and combined with our reduced costs, the Wilrich has turned into a sleeper success story here. Most recently, we're seeing the same thing with the Edson Notikewin and also Edson Fuller locations. So in the beginning, it was primarily our strong wells down at Ansel that drove the Swanson gas plant expansion, but now the whole 25-mile-long Ansel-Edson corridor is contributing superior drilling results. Looking back over 2015, we've once again been able to add more drilling locations to both our audited reserves inventory and also our internal inventory of identified locations. We drilled 140 wells during 2015, but we more than replaced our consumed inventory with new locations. Our year-end combined booked and unbooked inventory stands at about 2,082 locations, of which 1,257 are Spirit River or Blue Sky locations. Those 1,257 locations represent an increase of 9% over last year's Spirit River and Blue Sky numbers and would amount to about 9 years of drilling at our current rate of 140 wells per year. Included in the Spirit River locations are 473 Wilriches and 217 Notikewins. Looking forward into 2016, the most exciting thing on our plate is the Notikewin play at Brazeau. We've just drilled our first two West Brazeau Notikewin wells, and we've just finished shooting the largest 100% proprietary 3D seismic program in Peyto's history. Our new West Braz 3D is 236 square kilometers, which is about 91 square miles, and we've received a preliminary copy of the data just on Monday. As hoped, the 3D has revealed an abundance of Nauticuan drilling locations, plus numerous Falher channels and Cardium faults. So we're very pleased. The Nauticuan especially will add another layer of high deliverability prospects at Brazeau to complement the Wilrich. It's a great mix of opportunities to keep Brazeau growing. Lastly, it's probably worth mentioning that in 2015 we drilled our first vertical well in about 4 years. It was a faulted Cardium well at Brazeau and it tested quite nicely. The Cardium is thin at Brazeau, but there are numerous undrilled faults, so it's likely we'll be drilling more Cardiums here, and that should provide some extra gas liquids to the Brazeau portfolio.
Thank you, Dave. Turning to our CFO and VP of Finance, Kathy Turgeon, these days the energy industry financial news is full of companies announcing issues complying with their financial covenants and some seeking a relaxation of covenants. How is Peyto managing with its balance sheet and financial covenants in the current commodity price environment?
Thanks, Jim. While these are certainly challenging times, Peyto continues to focus on maintaining a strong balance sheet and conservatively managing our debt levels, as always. As disclosed in the MD&A, we are well within our financial covenants, and our budgeting and forecasting models for 2016 give us confidence this situation will continue. We don't foresee having to seek any kind of covenant relaxation or relief, even in this low commodity price environment.
Thank you, Kathy. Scott, the provincial government unveiled their carbon tax plan during 2015, and it looks to have a staged impact on our business over the next few years. What are the major considerations to the program as it pertains to Peyto? What are some of the things Peyto is doing or looking at to improve the energy output to energy input ratio for our company?
Jim, not sure if Premier Notley's listening, but we've got a pretty good message on this one, so you might want to grab a coffee if you are. We responded in our last quarter to some of the initial elements of that report, and there has been some clarification that has come out. But first of all, I want to reiterate that we're an extremely energy-efficient company. Energy inputs are real costs, and here at Peyto, we have a real distaste for costs. You heard it from Lee, from Todd, and others. It's a key focal point. We've been working on it ever since inception. In our minds, emissions management is directly aligned with business profitability. Last year, we started to do a more formal tally of our energy intensity, and we determined that we consume just under about 3% of the total energy we produce. When we compare that to other companies, we're about half of the energy intensity of the natural gas industry, as reported by Environment Canada, in the industry as a whole. So that's not a big surprise. We're a low-cost producer, and we're a low-energy-intensive company.
Okay.
I'm not done here yet. One of the key climate leadership clarifications was that the broad-reaching levy of $30 a ton set by the province won't commence till January of 2023 for on-site combustion in the conventional oil and gas sector. So it'll be some time before it has a direct impact on our bottom line. Some of the actions that we're undertaking, as you recall, we said that our Old Man plant is the only one amongst our plants that falls above the 100,000 ton mark and therefore is tracked annually under this Alberta Specified Gas Emitters program. Those kinds of facilities under that program are subject to carbon taxation, which is $20 a ton right now and $30 a ton in the future. We mentioned last quarter that we were going to undertake some work to reduce fuel gas consumption at that plant, and we've done that work, and we've reduced about 25% of the fuel uptake, which has freed up about a million a day of gas that otherwise would have been burned is now being sold, and it's taken that plant below the 100,000 ton mark, beyond the targets that were set. So it actually is, if we can retain that reduction, it'll be generating carbon credits. Now that, of course, is somewhat related to the liquid extraction strategies that we take on. If we go back to a high methane cut, then we will start burning a little bit more fuel. On another note, well-site chemical pumps are something that's a big focal point, and we expect to make some tremendous gains this year on that. If we could eliminate emissions from those well site chemical pumps, we would effectively reduce our total corporate emissions by about 20%. So we'll be working hard on that one. You heard some of the other elements that contribute. Recycling frack water is one. Lee's group is in the early stages of a very interesting reclamation project of drilling mud oil from drill cuttings. That'll reduce energy with respect to hauling cuttings and bringing in makeup fluid for our mud systems. Our completion designs, Lee commented, are continually under the microscope of cost analysis. And with each and every one of those cost breaks, there's an emissions reduction associated with that. And our plants, we continue to build them piece by piece, modularly, and keep them full. And if you're a thermodynamicist, you know that full plants are the most efficient plants from a standpoint of energy requirement to the work that the compressors are doing. So we're focused on this, and as I stated, it's just inherent to good cost management.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Darren, as we navigate through a challenging and potentially volatile year for commodity prices, service costs, market sentiment, and even the regulatory environments, what do you feel are the strengths that we bring to the table to deal with these challenges?
Well, Jim, you heard it here today. I think Scott could go on and about all the environmental initiatives that we got underway. You know, we're paying attention to that stuff. We're doing something about it. We're acting on these ideas. Lee talked at length about all the drilling initiatives and completion initiatives we got. Todd about the facilities and the production operations that we're doing. You know, there's so much behind the scenes that I think a lot of investors don't appreciate. They look at Peyto and they say, holy, you've only got 51 employees. How could you possibly be getting the job done over there? But, you know, the reality is we've got some incredibly dedicated people, and they're always focused on the right things here. You know, the primary objective of Peyto is to invest capital to make a return, to generate a profit. We always think about the dollars and cents. We don't get distracted by the plays, by the the production, and by some of the other things that a lot of our competitors do, because we know this is always about the bookends. It's about the money in and the money out. And despite the fact that we're looking now at a really low gas price, not dissimilar to what we saw in 2012, we know where our strengths lie and we know where our focus needs to be. And when we don't lose focus on what's important, we don't lose focus on the returns that we can generate on investing that capital wisely and efficiently and on driving costs down, we always come out stronger and better from some of this commodity volatility than going in. So, there's a lot of people right now that are quite fearful. They're looking at gas prices dropping. They're looking at the low oil prices. They're looking at the leverage that a lot of companies have. And they're fearful that the industry is in big trouble. But, I'm not fearful. I mean, we've been through some of these volatile times before. We've been very careful, of course, but we've always taken advantage in those periods. 2012 is a great example. We came out of 2012 stronger and bigger and better than ever. And I can see the same thing happening in 2016. We'll be a little careful, but we're also going to be aggressive, and we're going to keep pushing on all these initiatives to lower cost and generate more and more return. And at the end of the day, the dollars that we invest this year, I think, are going to be some of the most profitable dollars that we've ever invested in the company's history. So, I'm bullish. I'm excited about the prospect for this year. A lot of the industry is going to be sitting on the sidelines watching, and we're going to be roaring past them.
Well, that sounds like a really good time to turn this call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. John, if you can turn the call over to questions.
Our first question is from Michael Harvey of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thanks. Good morning, guys. So just a couple quick ones, just focusing on the Brazeau area. So just on well counts for this year, can you just remind us of the number of 2016 wells that will be drilled at Brazeau out of your total? And just tying into that a little one, you touched on this a bit, but most of your drilling at Brazeau has been on the east side, just given the plant pipeline location. Maybe you can just give us a sense for when and kind of in what magnitude we might see some more well results on the west, particularly given Tourmaline's very strong results next door.
Sure, Mike. Dave, do you want to jump in?
We've got about 20 wells planned, two rigs drilling throughout the year at Braz, but both rigs will have a pause for breakup. We can't drill through breakup in the Brazeau area. Most of the drilling for the remainder of the year is going to be on the east side, but we've just drilled our first two West Brazeau Nauticuans. We're actually testing them right now. We've built the pipe out to the surface lease. It's a two-well pad. So we'll have some preliminary production numbers pretty soon from our first two Nauticuans. And as I mentioned, we had that big 3D we see a lot more Nauticuan opportunity on the west side of Braz, and we've already got the pipeline out there. So I think we're really well positioned to keep our plant expansion full and hopefully build on that. The majority of the wells for the remainder of the year are going to be Wilrich with Nanticuans mixed in, and maybe we might try one more Cardium, but it's Wilrich and Nanticuan. Those are our two really strong targets out there with high deliverability, so we'll stick with those.
Thanks. And do you have an outlook for where you expect your total Brazo volumes to be at the end of the year? They're kind of around 60 million a day now, but you expect to, you know, I'm just trying to get a sense for when that plant might be filled over the next couple of years.
You know, we're expanding the plant right now to be able to produce 100 million cubic feet a day, and that's where we hope to see it.
You've got room to, if things really worked out and the price is there, we could add a couple more compressors to knock it up a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We always build these plants with the ability to push them a little bit harder than what the process may be designed for.
So I think, Mike, you know, we're doing about 13,000 BOEs a day or something around that at Braz right now.
Yeah.
Plant limited, of course, and as they talked about and as we mentioned in the press release, we've already got volumes behind pipe that are tied in by waiting on that plant expansion that's coming up here imminently. So, you know, 20,000 barrels a day out of our 113,000 barrel a day exit would probably be the right proportion for Braz to the total. But, you know, as Dave talked about with the 3D and a lot of the drilling opportunities here, you know, I think we see Brazo as an area that could become much more significant in Peyto's future. Not that 20,000 barrels a day isn't significant, but, you know, it's the kind of area where we could really see it continuing to grow over time.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. The next question is from Brian Christensen of Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Question for Todd or Darren. With respect to capital efficiencies, you've got them forecast coming down to 11,000 for flowing in 16, down from 12,000 in 15. Have you had any feedback to date from your providers on potential inflation in a strip environment in 17, or do you have a sense of what you could see for estimated capital efficiencies that far in future?
Well, near term, of course, we're basing it on what we've just done. So, you know, having just posted a year at 11.5 or 11.6, you know, forecasting another year, that doesn't seem like a stretch to us at all. And, you know, Lee talked earlier about how we're even making more gains on the 2015 costs already into 2016. And so the expectation is we can do even better than what we just posted. We had some pretty good wells in 2015 too, but we're fully expecting to get some pretty good wells in 2016. So, you know, if anything, we're thinking those costs are going to come down. But, you know, Lee, what are you guys seeing from service providers as far as beyond 2016?
As I mentioned earlier, we had a recent tender on OCTG's tubular goods. And what we're seeing is, as I mentioned, you know, with the strong dollar where we're at, we're seeing an 8% reduction in pipe prices. So, you know, that constitutes a big portion of our well cost, at least on the drilling front. So that alone, we're anticipating, assuming that holds for the balance of the year, we would anticipate that element alone would drag our drill cost down by 1.5% to possibly 2%. On its own. Rig rates, you know, we've steadily renegotiated these contracts, and we do want to preserve a healthy base of contractors, but everybody's been very responsive to market conditions. Anybody who's tracking utilization right now is watching Derek's tip over left, right, and center. We're down, you know, we'll be probably down close to 100 as an industry here in the next week. So I would anticipate some further reductions in rig rates. We got to watch and make sure we maintain healthy contractors. But on the same notes, they're working with their suppliers and reducing their costs, and they're flowing that through to us. So I see some gains to be made yet on service pricing. And as always, we're working on efficiencies. That's what we do. As I mentioned, it's easy to be a good negotiator right now, but we're focusing a lot on our efficiency improvement.
You know, we've been through these cycles before several times, obviously. We've all seen what happens when commodity prices rise, industry gets busy, there's pressure on the service industry then to respond. And we know the inefficiencies that creep in at that time. We know the delays that we see obtaining services and the cost inflation and the creep, and then some of the mistakes that get made when we start to introduce inexperience into the industry. So, you know, that's why we're trying to be so aggressive right now, trying to push the envelope as to getting as much done as we can, because we're taking advantage of the best in the cycle and we know that there's going to come a time in the future when we're going to have to deal with the opposite, and that's a much more challenging environment.
Great, thanks. And any color on the head office move?
Oh, we're done our lease here. We've been in this location for 6 years, and it's time for everybody to purge their offices, especially me. You know, we signed up about a year and a half ago for a lease to accommodate a little more expansion. Pato doesn't grow its staff very fast, of course, but we're kind of bursting at the seams, all of us, on one floor of office space here. So we're moving to a new location where we'll have a little bit more room for long-term expansion. So that's it's all positive. Moving forward.
Great. Thanks, Darren.
You bet.
Thank you. The next question is from Bob Fitzmartin of First Energy Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I'm loath to congratulate anybody for coming out with their quarter, but those results were impressive. So as a shareholder, thank you for that. Do want to ask you, though, about things that I get asked about lately, which is dividend policy. I know traditionally corporate philosophy has tried to match or have earnings that exceed the dividend, with your earnings power reduced despite some hedges in 2016. Just want to fish for some color on how that the thinking is at the management level going ahead here in the near term.
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. I mean, we get it lots from investors too. You know, I think long term, the dividend policy, we want to set dividends that we believe are very stable. I don't think yield investors like to see their dividends whipsawed around a lot. So we're trying to set dividends at a level that we think are sustainable over the long term, which is challenging considering the volatility we've seen in the commodity prices. But, you know, I think we still are optimistic that with the growth in the underlying asset base that we have and some recovery in the commodity price, that we'll get back to earning the level of dividends that we're currently at quite quickly. We're wanting to wait and see how 2016 evolves here from a gas price perspective and what it looks like going into 2017. And we don't want to make any rash decisions on the dividend. But ultimately, we do want to design the dividend at a sustainable level, too. So, you know, I think we're comfortable waiting till the end of 2016 to see how things evolve and see how the gas price looks on the forward strip, and just see where we sit sort of later on in the year. As always, you know, our board talks about the dividend level quarterly, but again, we don't want to make any knee-jerk reactions. And knowing the earnings power that we truly have, you know, a little bit of commodity improvement translates on our cost structure into some pretty impressive earnings growth. So, you know, we can quite quickly get back to that dividend level, even though today it looks like we're dividending more than we're earning. But, you know, a couple of years ago, we were earning a lot more than we're dividending. So, again, trying to just smooth out some of that volatility that the commodity price brings in.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Bob.
The next question is from David Meats of Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This probably ties in quite well with the last question, actually. You mentioned in your prepared remarks that you're comfortable staying within covenants this year, staying with them comfortably. But that said, even with your revised 2016 capital program, it looks like your leverage metrics will be trending higher. Can you speak to your level of comfort with these metrics this year going a little bit higher than they have been historically?
Yeah, you know, David, I think the entire industry, of course, is seeing their leverage metrics changing quite dramatically. Pato, relatively speaking, is quite under-levered compared to the rest of the industry. That's a place we've always been and a place we like to be. But at the same time, you've heard of our counter-cyclical strategy. We've talked about it before. We do want to be aggressive during these periods. We're getting costs right now and efficiencies right now like we've never seen before. So to sit on the sidelines with capital and available capital and not do anything in this time, just, you know, it seems wrong to us. We want to take advantage of this period as much as we can, and we'd be fully prepared to slow down when commodity prices get really high again and industry gets busy again. You know, we'll pay down our debt at that point, and we'll re-strengthen our balance sheet at that point, having already locked in all of these really good costs and efficiencies. So, you know, I think you've seen a lot of probably the analysis done on Pato, and we've done it ourselves internally, of course, and we don't see ourselves getting into an uncomfortable position with our balance sheet. Nowhere near anything dangerous, of course. We'll be aggressive, but we've always been very conservative with the balance sheet, and we'll make sure it stays that way.
So if it gets to the end of 2016 and the forward strip is showing some potential for outspending next year, which lever would you pull first? Dial back a couple rigs or reduce the dividend?
Well, I think we let the rates of return of the projects that we've got really drive all of our decision making. And we know that when commodity prices get too low, well, then the rates of return on the investments get too thin. And that naturally governs how much we're prepared to invest and how much of the cash flow we're prepared to spend. So, even this year, for instance, we're seeing improved efficiencies for sure, but if we see prolonged lower gas prices, then we just know that the returns aren't going to be as good on some locations, and those wells will come off the drill schedule, and so our capital program will shrink naturally just based on that forward strip as it presents itself. So, usually that's the thing that governs us the most, and it's the easiest one to adjust on the fly. And because we're in control of all of our capital, it again is easy for us to adjust on the fly. We're not spending all this money in one check for one big acquisition or something. We're doing it one well at a time, and we're making that commitment at a very small level, one well at a time. And so all through the year, we can adjust the pace of activity and the pace of capital spend as we see the future evolving.
Okay, perfect. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Thank you. If there are no further questions registered, I'd like to turn you back over to Mr. Darren G. Please go ahead, sir.
Great. Well, thanks very much, everybody, for tuning in this morning. Hopefully we provided some color and some depth to some of these issues that all companies are dealing with these days, and give you a bit of color and some understanding of how we're achieving such low costs in the industry and how we're still managing to generate earnings even in these commodity price environments. I think we'll be one, if not the only, E&P company in the Canadian space to actually generate earnings this quarter and solid earnings this year. So, the Peyto strategy really is coming to light and shining quite brightly in this environment. We're going to just keep that strategy going through all of 2016, and we'll be back to you to talk to you about the first quarter activities in a couple of months. So tune in then. Thanks.